it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Buenos dias, chicas y chicos. Hello and welcome, a very warm welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, spreading and sharing the supreme delight of this wonderful and fast-growing game. I'm your host, Minter Dial, and this podcast is brought to you by Paddle 1969, the largest manufacturer of premium paddle courts, one court for life by Paddle 1969. The Joy of Paddle is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. For more information about the network, go ahead and check out evergreenpodcast.com. So this is the inaugural season of the Joy of Paddle podcast. And to start with, we're going to do an episode once every fortnight. Episodes will drop every other Wednesday at 12 noon London time. Please let us know what you think about the show by putting up a rating and review. So this second episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast is with my cousin, Nelly Granda. Nelly was UCLA's top tennis player from 1998 to 2001. He's been in paddle since he was 5 years old and has been a forerunner of the sport, first in France and then in the USA. Today he's ranked 238th in the world on FIP and is among the top paddle players in the United States. Previously, he was ranked among the top 50 in the world. Driven by his passion for paddle and his entrepreneurial spirit, Nelly founded PaddleX to build quality paddle infrastructures in the US. Please enjoy. Game on!
Now, hello?
Yep, it's perfect.
All right, perfect. All right. That's the best I can do.
Yep, all good.
Go ahead.
Nelly, all right, ready? Here we go. Nelly Granda, my cousin, fellow paddle crazy aficionado. Great to have you on the show. As you know, this is all about the joy of paddle. And want us to get started by understanding how you got into paddle. I know you began in Acapulco, and that must have been on the original courts. When you were in 1981, how on earth old were you back then?
Exactly. Yeah. Hello, Minter. It's a pleasure to be here when discussing our passion, our common passion together. And yes, the first encounter with paddle is or paddle was in 1981 for me. I was 5 years old. At the time, I was following my parents, obviously, around the world. And for holidays, we ended up going to Acapulco with a group of friends, group of my parents' friends, and got acquainted with the Corcueras, the Enrique Corcuera. And we actually had to, we got the joys of playing paddle while, you know, they started playing what they called at the time their world championships, meaning, you know, the 20 of them gathering around the holidays of New Year's. And after a couple of days, they decided to, oh, you know what, we should have the kids play. And so we played, you know, there was like maybe six or seven kids of us, or eight, I guess, to make four pairs. And we played the unofficial first junior championships.
Way to get ranked in the world, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I ended up winning, actually. Yeah. It's funny because this is a funny story because I only found that out a few weeks ago. I called Enrique Corcuera Jr. To congratulate him on opening his first club in Texas. He actually himself got into the paddle business now. And I sent him that photo because he's obviously gathering a lot of memorabilia of the times. And he said, oh, yes, that's my mother giving you some pesos because you beat me in the final of that tournament. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so funny because I didn't know who I played, obviously.
So just going back to that court, I mean, obviously you were 5 years old, but what do you remember about it in terms of its the funky elements of it? Because as I understand it, each of them was a little bit different in Acapulco in those days.
Yeah, it was actually a very interesting. So I don't have specific remembrance of that specific chord, but I do have a remembrance of the whole dynamic, and it was very fun because every house had a different chord with different specificities, and every house had their different rules. Because on that chord, for instance, there was an AC unit in the back of the in the back of on the back wall of the house that was pointing out into the courts. So anytime a ball would hit that AC unit, well, they would play, they would have to play a let. Some other courts, and the shapes of the wall were never similar. Every court, first of all, was in hard court. The sizes were different, and some of the shapes of the walls were even different. Some courts had on one side a very low wall that was maybe 1 meter tall, and on the other side had walls because it was a retaining wall to the hill. The wall would be 9 meters tall, you see, and so there's a long some walls went all the way back all to the net, and some houses had walls that were only staying 3 meters back from the back wall. So all these rules were very different, and they were adapting to the actual specificities of the court. I remember even one court, one house where we played, and where you were not allowed to smash the ball out of the court. You would get penalized for that because the neighbors were complaining so much about the balls that the host had decided that ball would go outside the court, even having been touched the ground before, would be declared a losing point.
It reminds me very much the beginning of jeu de paume or real tennis, where each of the
Yes.
kings had their own courtyards and their own rules and their own windows and all that. So that was that's a wonderful story. Tell us, Nelly, what is your involvement in paddle today?
Today, I mean, I've been always kind of involved as a player, even as a club owner. I owned my first club in Nice in 2003, back when I was playing, I'd say, in the French national team at my highest level. And I've always, even since I came back in the US in 2010, was trying to facilitate the implementation of paddle courts. So I was selling courts, counseling, advising, taking part ownerships in clubs, but it was always as a hobby on the side of my real estate company that I was running. Today, for now, over a year, I've totally decided to completely allocate 100% of my time into development of Paddle through my club brand. It's called Paddle X. We partner with a group of Chilean partners that are very big in real estate and the wellness or sports facilities clubs in Chile, and we have, I believe, come up with a very interesting and strong concept around the quality of paddle and the quality of the infrastructure for paddle for the US. We today have signed that are already in construction as we speak. One is downtown Miami, right next to, in the middle of downtown. Cannot be more centric than that, next to the Heat Arena, next to the Arch Center, the Opera House in Miami. And the second one is in Boca Raton, where
Florida.
Boca Raton, Florida. Both clubs will host at least 10 courts. And we are actively about to sign a place in New York, more to come. The difficulty today is to find locations. Obviously, real estate prices in the US are very high, so it's, I think there is a lot of, and that's one of the reasons for the slow development of Paddle in the US is it's a lot of people, a lot of companies, a lot of venture capitalists are very keen on opening and starting business in the US, but very few actually succeed at doing it. So, we're us included so far, we we haven't opened yet. We're right now in the permitting process, and we'll be starting construction sometime in June, July, August, hopefully. You know, how this thing is going a bit slow.
It's very similar to the situation, at least in England, where there are still only 250 courts, and the real problem is constantly there's not a lot. There's a lot of interest, a lot of money ready, but the planning issue remains the problem. But the other thing that the United States is facing, of course, as fellow Yanks, is this other game. Some people call it a sport. I don't. Pickleball. It seems to be the rage in the United States, and it's so much easier to build. You don't need walls. You just put lines on a court and put up a little net, and there you go. Yeah, how do you think that battle is going to go between paddle and pickle?
Well, I as a paddle fanatic and always been a big defender of the sport, you know, I don't see it as a battle, honestly. I think it serves two specific purposes. I think it can be very complementary. In our club in Boca, we actually even considered including some pickle into the paddle clubs. But after all, we decided not to because of various reasons. First of all, the sound, compatibility. A lot of people don't necessarily are not the same crowd. It's not at all the same business model because you don't charge as much for paddle, I mean, for pickle as paddle. And for one of the main reasons, as you said, is that pickle is free. And paddle takes a lot of, you know, money to set up. And obviously, for the same reason, it's costing more money to play. So it's two different business models. It's both sports. You know, you got to call them sports because they are played at a professional level. Both of them are going to face, I believe, different challenges and have different advantages. And the one for pickle is obvious, and I see it here in the Hamptons, as where I am right now. You know, the interest for both sports is quite large, and obviously the pickle is easy. You just paint a couple lines on the ground and you're done, and you start going. I even saw some clay court pickle courts here, and I'm not sure how that plays out with the balls and the bounces and so on. But then I think that pickle as a show, as a sport, is far superior, and pickle as a hobby, as a sport or athletic activity for a lot of people, makes a lot of sense too. You know,
yeah.
People don't necessarily can or want to have a physical exercise as hard as paddle. And, you know, for people like that, I see that as being a great compliment, actually. And I say it really I say it even for myself. You see, it's a great way of playing a racket sport with kids and grandparents and the whole family playing the same game. Whereas tennis definitely is not pleasant if you don't have, first you play in singles, but second, even if you play in doubles, if you don't have four players that are of the same skill level, then everybody is annoyed. In paddle, that's not so true. You can always compensate. And we had last night a great game where I played with my girlfriend, who's a beginner, against my sister, who's confirmed, and her husband, who I'd say a medium intermediate player. And we had
so
a
fair
great time.
Four very different levels.
Four very different levels, and we had a great time. And we decided to give it a try today on the pickle court, and I'm sure it's going to be fine too. You know,
yeah.
So I'm not one of those terrorist, absolute obsessed players of one sport. I have obviously a huge preference for paddle. There's no comparison in my opinion, but I do understand people who want to play pickle.
All right.
As a show, as a business, as a show, as a business, and as a player, I 100% paddle to pickle.
I'm so with you. Padel. paddle. America has to do things differently yet again.
Yes, you know, it's, I don't even know. We actually had that conversation with my friend Wayne Borch yesterday. We were on the court playing. He just had, I don't know if you know, but he just opened, he's opening actually today, the first paddle club in Manhattan. And today is the opening. And so he was on CNBC and Bloomberg talking about this. And he's obviously saying paddle, you know, very American wise. And I say, Wayne, you know, what do you think about this? Don't you, we've been fighting to differentiate the game from all the other paddle games, the platform, the pop tennis, the this, the that, even the pickle. And so, yeah, but, you know, in the end, they all went on with their own name. And, you know, it's just paddle. You spell it the same way, P-A-D-E-L, you know, even, you know, we were talking about the even how the Spaniards were saying it. You know, they don't say padel. They say padel. You know, they don't. So, you know,
accent we're playing on with the words. A.
Yeah. So we're playing with words. I think the most important is that we have our own spelling. That's what really matters, whether English people or English-speaking people say paddle or padel or so on. As long as we write it, we don't write it P-A-D-D-L-E, I think we're good.
Well, it certainly fits for my friends down in Philadelphia with Padelphia. And then the other thing are like the names of the strokes, like Bandeca or, you know, Bajada, as opposed to the ways the Spaniards pronounce La Bajada or La Bandeja.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to get involved. I want to talk to you about you and your paddle. So one of the questions I think is fun is to find out, how do you describe yourself as a paddle player, as an animal? What kind of animal are you on a paddle court?
Oh, what kind of animal? That's I would be, an older bear today. You know, if I had to say anything, you know, I mean, as you know, I'm pretty tall. And I have a pretty big overhead, and I'm a lefty. So, you know, I've totally formatted my game and learned watching Juan Martin Diaz. It was my idol when I started in 2002. He was the number one player in the world and the best, and some say, you know, greatest player of all time. And he was lefty. So I was obviously trying to copy that, which is a very difficult, you know, style of play to copy. But I'd say I am that kind of player. You know, I'm very offensive. Today's comparative would be Arturo Coelho, you know, who's number one in the world, but he plays a different game.
And a lefty.
And a lefty, of course. Yeah, that's why I'm mentioning those guys, because very similar in the way that they never relentlessly attack. They relentlessly move forward. And that's what suits my temperament and my game as well.
Well, I see cat-like attack ability that you have, Nelly. What's your favorite shot?
Oh, the overhead. My favorite shot is by far, and it's funny because as much as the overhead, when I say the overhead is the hitting overhead, is my favorite shot. The bandeja is my least favorite. So. Mm. It's
overhead, it's but not as nuts.
Yes, because I have a formerly big and good overhead, and I can say that with many pretty much confidence of many years of playing, and I've been told that all the time. But to the same reason, I have an abnormally bad bandeja because I never hit it. I never hit one. Whenever the ball is over my head, I tend to hit the ball as hard as I can.
All right. Well, the next question could be involved, but what's the shot that you in your mind would like to improve the most?
Oh, there you go. definitely the bandeja, because as I don't get younger, I tend to not have the speed or the legs or, you know, to get under the ball that fast to hit the ball from any point or even the strength, you know, because you know, and actually the balls have gone a bit softer in the years. The courts have slowed down. So all these conditions don't help me. You know, I used to be able to hit the ball from anywhere from the court out through par three or all the way back to my court. Today is less true. The balls, the courts are slower. And so I have to definitely get better on my bandeja to be able to control and not lose the net, because people don't understand that the goal of the bandeja is to not, is not an offensive shot, is to not lose control of the net. And people tend to lose that in their mind. They always go for a bit too much, and the ball comes off the walls a lot and gives the chance to the opponents to take the net from you.
I would say that's one of the confusing things of watching the Pro Tour. I feel like they tend to be more in a whip, like a vibora. They rarely do as much with the bandeja, I feel, than they do the vibora.
Okay, well, I think if you actually, next time you watch a game, you actually take your pen and your pencil and you count that out, you will be surprised, especially in outdoor conditions, how many bandejas they do. A guy like Sanyo Gutierrez or, you know, obviously,
Bella.
Or Bella, they will hit, you'll see, not 50-50, maybe even 60-40 in favor of bandejas. They do hit a lot. Because when you have lobs that are coming from 30 meters in the sky with the sun and the wind,
good point.
You can't hit it. You just got to try to avoid and lose it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just watching. And even if in the biggest condition in Valladolid yesterday in the finals, you would see even the biggest hitters in the world, like Tapia and Coelho, would be pushing the ball.
Yeah, Martin Deneno, he had the same sort of idea, just getting it back.
Yeah, because it's really you can hit as far, you know, these, especially at that level, you can hit the fastest, hardest vibora that you can. It's bread and butter for them.
Absolutely.
To get it back and even to use it, use the speed and use the rebound of the walls to take the net away from you. So they tend to, I'd say, even to play 75% for three bandejas, they'll play one vibora.
Thanks for the correction. Excellent. So what about your most, the funniest thing or experience you've ever had on a paddle court? Does one come to mind for you?
Ugh, so many, actually.
Well, that's great to hear.
Like I said, it's such a great game. Even yesterday, you know, we're a band of players that, you know, since I moved to Miami, have played together, I don't know, over 3,000 times, the same four players. I'm talking about, you know, Wayne Borch, Willy Alcorta, Gabby Meana, and myself, since, you know, I introduced them to the game back in 2013-14 when, you know, they first time we built a court down in Miami. And again, at the best level in the US and definitely in Miami, we were, you know, four of the six, seven players we're talking about. So again, we still played yesterday, haven't played in a while. We play much less together than we used to because we, you know, the group has spread out a bit more. There's so much more activity. You know, everybody's doing, kind of building their own network and their own clubs and here and there. And so, but still, we got together. We haven't played in months and so on. And we had some amazing points with, because we know each other, you know. We're two lefties, Wayne, so we know we both hit the ball pretty well. We end up being outside and playing through the glass, through the door, over the net, into the net. And the points go on forever, you know. And so it's really amazing how much I always tell myself, wow, it's incredible how, you know, this doesn't go away. It doesn't matter how, of course, I'm less physical than I used to be 15, 20 years ago, but I'm still having as much fun, if not more. Because today, I'd say the result counts a bit less, and the, you know, mean or the actual match or play or pleasure of just hitting the ball, feeling the ball well, and so on is greater. But yeah, I mean, we've had some amazing games throughout the years. I had some great pleasures, you know, getting to the semifinals of the European Championships in 2007 was a big one. Being the first team to beat a Spanish couple in a FIP event
was a
big one, and representing France, you know, representing my home country to play in the international events for 10 years. And now I'm looking actually forward to, because now, you know, the FIP is doing senior tours and senior competition. So I'm going to be playing next year, you know, or competing to get into the French team to play in the plus 45s. So all this is our great memories.
That's beautiful. So what about life lessons? I think sports in general is a great way of learning things about life. But in paddle, what sort of life lesson has you taken away from your, since 5 years old, you've been playing paddle? What worked to you?
Well, you know, I think, as you said, paddle, but sports even more so in general, are a great lesson of life because, you know, every day you have to compete and you have to lose. You have to learn how to lose, and you have to learn how to reminisce on yourself to, in French, you say, se remettre en question. Mm-hmm. You have to, all the training and all the hard work, and eventually every week, there's only one team that wins the whole week. Everybody else loses, you know. So if you have 32 teams, there's 31 teams that are losers, only one that actually comes on top. So you have 90%+ chances of losing every week, and yet again you have to get up and you have to, you know, remettre en question. I don't know how you can call it. Translate that into
be
English.
Critical about yourself, maybe, at least.
Yeah, be critical, or yeah, exactly, like really reset your mind and to try to be better and get better to avoid losing next week, and then you lose again. And anyway, that's what happens in real life as well. You have setbacks in like real life, and I feel that having all the background in sports, it gives me the skills to rebound much easier than other people I see around me that eventually have not had that chance of having a sports career all their life.
In a mashup of the two last comments you made about the fun shots, is in Paddle House, I saw, and I don't know how generally it's there, but they have this thing called push it, where after you've done a point, you like it, you hit the button, and they will capture the last 30 seconds, which is kind of fun. It's a great way to document the fun that you had on the court. And of course, the other thing which I love about paddle is that the players will actually commend each other on great shots. It's not about winning the point, it's about having good paddle. And yet, when I look at those shots, when I do the video at the end, I come back, oh, that was a great point. I look at it, I'm like, oh my God, I was terrible. Or I look terrible, you know? That notion of self-doubt or criticism of self, you need to bring that reality with you back off the court to see how you can improve and remember some humility.
100%. And I you have no idea how many times, it's funny, there's a phenomenon right now in the U.S., going with red paddle, because red paddle is the first system. I don't know if you've heard of this, but it's the first system. It's a rating system, and it's an AI rating you, and not yourself. And it is incredible, because I'm talking to the founders of this, and 99.9% of the people, when they're asked what their rating is or should be, they always think they're better than they are. Me included. And then. When you have an AI that's actually telling you that the ranking or so that you have or the rating that you're getting, you cannot. It's the same AI for everybody, right? So you can, of course, there's flaws, there's, you know, depending on where the first person, because the first coach has to rate you, give you a temporary rating. And because you start at that rating, whether you go up and down, that's up to the AI. But it does influence eventually until you play 100 matches or 50 at least. You know, you do get some kind of advantage from the rating you get in the first place. But anyways, it's amazing how even all the people who are beginners, intermediates, advanced players, they all want to play with better players. They say, oh, no, I'm bored playing with players lower than me and so on. They all want to play. Yeah, but you have to think that the people that play better than you, they think the same way you think about the game.
Of course.
They want to play with players above themselves, so they're never going to want to play with you. You just got to play with whoever is willing to play and be humble about it and, you know, let the results talk for yourself. And if you start winning and playing better, you'll get to play with better players. And it's always fun to see. It's a great school of life, like I just said. And it's also a great, in that same way, of humbleness. Because I tell all the tennis players, I tell them every time, if you want to get better, because tennis players are really good. They get to a point, but then they have a plateau where they have to learn to play with the walls, for instance. And until they accept to look bad and lose points and let the ball go into the walls and look like a fool, they're not going to get any better. And it's just, you just got to be humble. You got to accept that tennis is a game of winners. Paddle is a game of no mistakes.
You taught me.
Yes, exactly. Paddle is a game of no mistakes. The winner at the end of the match is not the one who's hit the most winners. The winner at the end of the match is the one that's hit the last unforced errors. Always.
Fabulous. Nelly, one word about the future of paddle or padel in the United States, mm-hmm. which is basically your country these days.
Yes. I mean, listen, that's it. There's no turning back now. The hype is here. The demand is there. We're having very important, some I've named, some I haven't. I want to say business people that are now getting involved, that are investing. We have amazing events coming that are not been announced yet. So I can't announce anything yet, but there's even this year, a huge event coming in October. So there is plenty of, every light is green. Now we need to convert. And I believe that Pickle is doing us an amazing favor. I think it's forming the American population to an alternative racket sport than tennis. And I think that anywhere Pickle has landed, which is pretty much almost everywhere now, is a very proper environment for padel to engage. Because I think that a lot of people play Pickle because it's the last best thing, but they don't know about paddle. And as soon as they're going to get exposed to both, they will convert to paddle. And not everybody, but, if I had to put, 75%, I would say. And I think that they should coexist. People look for different things in different games, in both different games. And I believe that that's what's going to happen. I think, yes, we're not going to have 50,000 courts in the next 5 years, like Pickle is kind of going to, because of the cost of the infrastructure and permitting is different. But even if we go from 160 courts today or 200 courts to 10,000, or forget about 10,000, let's even say 5,000, in the next 5 years. That's a huge increase. It's huge, you know. So it's going to take a little time, but we are at Parallax are definitely acting as it was a certain thing. We're investing all our time, all our resources, and all our money, and we're going bold. We're building big clubs straight because, yes, we know that the demand for courts is gonna be stronger than the supply. So we're going straight in. We're not building three courts and see what happens. And that's my belief. My belief is that we're gonna need tens of thousands of courts in the next 10 years.
Which means we're going to need a lot of good pros as well to help, you know, bring the people in from the other sports, because that's a challenge. If you don't have a proper paddle coach who's not just like a tennis convert, but a real paddle player who knows the strokes, knows the tactics, which is going to be difficult. It reminds me, Nelly, of something that's happened at the Queen's Club, which is my club in London, where they introduced two outdoor paddle courts, beautiful surface and, you know, panoramic. And the thing that's happened, where they have four other sports, rackets, jeu de paume, lawn tennis, and squash. And what they found is that paddle is the only one that unites all four sports. It brings everyone together. True. And that's such a beautiful thing.
You have to know, and this all comes from the DNA of the game. We didn't mention this, but because people do give me this, they tell, oh, but why is paddle going to take over and not pickle? Because that's the way the DNA of the game was created by Enrique Corcuera and his friends, Alfonso de Onlo. My father was one of them. And they all sat down and they're like, fuck, we all love tennis. We all come from tennis background. So let's make sure that, of course, we're all tennis aficionados. And they started putting their head together. Okay, let's create a game. We're all now turning in our 50s. Some of us are overweight. But we all love the game of tennis. Let's just imagine a game, imagine a racket sport, and let's keep the good sides of tennis, and let's take away the bad sides. And the serve is the number one bad side, you know, because serving overhead in that little square all the way over there, behind a net, and that's super short compared to the rest of the... It's nonsense. You know, it's total nonsense. Serve just should be like an introduction to the game, you know? That's number one. And then we really like the fact or, you know, the walls from rackets or from squash, you know. So let's keep that. The ball is the best ball. You know, I remember I had this conversation. They tried all sorts of balls before picking tennis. They've even thought about the racket ball. Ball, you know, that's bouncy
Springer. Yeah,
exactly. So you know, the best combination for everything was the tennis ball. So that's the reason why padel is so amazing, because it was created with the idea of let's create the ultimate racket sport with the strong sides of each racket sport that we know at the time. And that's the DNA of the game.
Well, Nelly, beautiful. Great to have you on the show. I love your energy. It's great to hear about what you're doing in the States, PaddleX and more. I'll put all those in the show notes. How would you suggest anyone follow what you're up to? Maybe any other links or social programs, social sites that you'd like to have in the show notes?
Of course. Listen, for now, as pretty much I think nobody is aware, but we have chosen at PaddleX, because we are not pitching for investors right now. We've chosen not to publicize too much about us. We'd rather be, you know, create the big bang once we are open, ready to go. So we do have a landing page. That's PaddleX.us on the internet, and we do have an Instagram page. But that's pretty much it for now.
Watch this space.
Yes, exactly. We're going to start marketing our site in Miami as soon as we have the permits, because I don't want to be saying paddle coming soon, like a lot of clubs that have done. And, you know, a year later, we still have no paddle on the course. So the last hurdle for the first location and the first start, the first round of marketing is going to be when we get the permit. And that should be in the next couple of weeks.
It reminds me of when the software business was launching back in the heyday in the 80s, 1980s. They would say, oh, we got this great launch, is coming. We're working on it. The bugs just getting even fixed. And then we came up with a new term of vaporware. Where is it? So it makes me think of paddleware. Where's exactly. The paddle? All right, listen.
Yeah.
Nale, thank you so much. Vamos.
Vamos. See you. See you soon on the courts.
You betcha.
So I hope you've enjoyed this Joy of Paddle episode. Please don't forget to subscribe to be the first in queue for the next episode. And if you like what you hear, please do share around with other paddle aficionados. This is a sport that deserves to be played by absolutely everyone. And if you got a story that you'd like to share, please send me an email, or better yet, a voice note at nminterdial@gmail.com. With that, thanks for listening. And see you on the next episode of the Joy of Paddle podcast. Vamos!
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.